Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Blame social media, but summer has barely begun, and there are stories across the country about so-called teen takeovers, where groups of young people show up en masse at the same place and same time, and mayhem ensues. Public safety is an immediate concern. Here's more on that with Bob Rose at WSKY in Florida.
You know, keep in mind that technology is ever evolving. It seems like every single day that I look at a news story or an article or something, there's the latest and greatest in artificial intelligence, drone technology, you know, weapon systems, all of these things. But you got to remember that we always have to be one step ahead. Mm-hmm. So as we continue to move forward, we're right in the contract and construction stages of our new real-time intelligence center, which will utilize a myriad of law enforcement technology, everything from gunshot detection systems to traffic engineering camera systems, license plate readers, all those things, with the goal to enhance security and safety here in Alachua County. Please keep in mind that already we've seen drastic decreases in violent crime over the last 6 months to a year, and we impart that a lot to what we consider to be professionally aggressive law enforcement.
Okay. All right. Look, I love it. Captain Chris Sims, he's the public information officer for the Alachua County Sheriff's Office. And speaking of which, aggressive enough to stop these teen takeovers, because we've seen them around the country and things can get out of control very quickly. You know, Alachua County's not super populated like, you know, Clearwater Beach and Pinellas County, and they had their struggles dealing with crowds there.
They have. So I want to tell our community, you know, they've already had three of these teen takeovers. Mm-hmm. They often bring violence. We are not immune to violence in the form of, you know, gunshots and things of that nature. In Clearwater, we saw, I believe, where one or two folks were injured from gunfire. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this, at least for the Alachua County Sheriff's Office, we're at a zero tolerance at this point. We're already in regular communication with the Attorney General. The Attorney General, Attorney General Uthmeyer has really taken a strong stance on these teen takeovers, where they want statewide prosecution for anyone who decides to form or create one of these teen takeovers. We saw one at the bowling alley over there near the skating rink this past weekend. 200 to 300 people, they were all, you know, beating on one another and filming everything, and it took hours to get them out of there. We did make several arrests. The goal is not to arrest your juvenile child, right? And the goal is definitely not to show up to your home and knock on the door and tell you that a stray bullet hit and killed them. Okay,
right?
So pay attention to what your children are doing. You know, they are children and you are the parent. You know, I've got Life 360 on my kids. I know where they're at every moment. If you see them in areas where you know they shouldn't be, you know, my grandmother used to tell me nothing good happens after dark for kids. All right. And I still live by that. At dark, my kids come home. I don't care how, you know, I don't care if they're 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to who they're hanging out with. Pay attention to the areas that they're in. You know, keep an eye on social media where you're seeing that they're advertising these block parties or teen takeovers. Nothing good comes from these things.
Now, you talk about technology and the advancements you're going to have at the sheriff's office. But how do you balance this? You want to be proactive. You want to get the intel. You want to stop the crowds before, you know, they get large and out of hand. But, you know, we also have constitutional rights. You do have the right to assemble. So it's tough from law enforcement, right? You just can't bust people for congregating. In fact, you have to kind of wait for somebody to do something wrong, right?
Correct. So there is a difference in lawful and unlawful, right? The difference between peaceful protest or the constitutional right to freedom of speech is far different than what you're seeing in these teen takeovers.
Right. No, I agree.
Right. So what you're seeing there is things such as a fray, right? They all mm-hmm. meet up, and the next thing you know, they create large disruption. They begin, the fights are almost instant. I saw a video the other day. Within 30 seconds, they were mobbing two or three people in the street and just beating on them. So, you know, wearing what I call the ninja mask, the mm-hmm. full mask,
baklava,
you can only
yeah.
see their eyes. Once again, that is still a crime in the state of Florida. You know, you cannot wear a full mask. You know, now if you're wearing the COVID medical mask or what have you, because you are worried about your health and safety, that's one thing. But we can definitely tell the difference.
Right.
Here's more on teen takeovers from Mark Cox in St. Louis.
Okay. We're talking to a new St. Louis County Police Chief, Juan Cox, on the line now. You know, making headlines a lot lately has been, I would perceive it as a spike, but that may just be because there's been more coverage of it. But it's been in juvenile crime and some of the problems we've been having with large crowds of juveniles gathering and roaming around. Do you see that? Do you think that's a challenge that you're facing right now?
It's a huge challenge, Mark. And you know, it's funny. I was talking to someone yesterday. Matter of fact, it was a sergeant with the St. Louis Metro PD. And I said, these teenage takeovers is what keeps me up at night. I know we've been working, our intelligence unit's been working with the St. Louis City's intelligence unit to come up with some operational plans on how we would combat those issues. But, you know, they're real savvy. They pop up quickly. So you have to make sure that you have enough staffing available on any given night to be able to combat that behavior.
And of course, whatever you can do is then somewhat limited by how the court responds, right? Because the problem we've seen in the city is that a lot of these juveniles will be turned over and then they get a slap on the wrist and they're released to their parents almost immediately. And then some of those same kids are out as repeat offenders the next night.
That is correct. I remember when I was an undercover detective, and that's going back a long, long time, 1997. And I was doing some undercover buys, and I bought some crack cocaine from a 13-year-old kid.
Wow.
And we couldn't, family court wouldn't admit the kid, so we had to take the kid back to his mom. And her response was, "Where's his money?" And we were driving in the area later that night, and the kid was back out on the street corner. So it's a huge problem. It is, I know it's a, we're constantly working on that and working with the family court, working with the state to try to figure out what's the best way to combat this issue. Is it making it punitive for the parents, or, you know, I think we still wrestle with the right answer because, you know, you don't want to ruin a kid forever. But I do think that you definitely need to be held responsible for your actions.
Is that something you would support? Is some sort of a fine or some sort of a punishment, if you will, for the parents who, like you said, just have no care in the world? They'll let the young kid run out there and they're out there at 2 a.m. And then when you bring them back, they're mad at you for bringing them back.
I, you know, it's difficult. I support, we have to do something, but in a lot of these cases is grandma that's 75, 80 years old, that's raising her child's 12-year-old kid. And, you know, that's a huge burden. I would like for the family court to step up. I would like for, and they go by a point system, right? That's how they evaluate if the kid's going to be admitted or not. I think for these violent offenses and these the constant, I would say, bad behavior, I think the kid should be held responsible. I think family court should, we should all work together to come up with some kind of system where they can be held responsible for their actions, and we can still continue to try to give them the support that they need.
Sure.
A key to keeping teens out of trouble is keeping them busy. So parents might want to think about trying to cultivate a sports obsession, like World Cup. Here's more on the game taking over the world this summer from Tommy Tucker in New Orleans.
Join an expert, Stephen Ray, local writer, author of Finn McCool's Football Club. Local author, ex-soccer expert out in L.A. for the first game. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
I'm well, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. For those of us that don't know a lot about soccer, first of all, should we call it soccer or should we call it football?
You call it what you like. Right. I think the rest of the world calls it football, but we call it soccer here. It's all good.
So tell me how this game started. Did it originate in Great Britain or where?
No, well, geez, it depends how long you've got. I mean, they said it originated in ancient China thousands of years ago. But really, it's called football because it was the English who sort of codified it. They made the rules in the 19th century. They were like, there were so many rules and so many different variations of the game. And they were the one that came up with like these 17 rules, maybe 13 rules that said, look, this is how we play it. And of course, that's one of the things that, that made the game spread around the world was it's so simple. You basically have a ball and you try and put it in the goal and that's it. And so it, it makes it a lot different to many games. As we know, well, no, over here, NFL, just there are so many rules and there's so many. It seems so complicated compared to soccer. It's you get the ball and you put it in the net. That's basically it.
See, but to me it seems more complicated than that because for one thing, Stephen, I don't know when the game ends.
Yeah. Well, that's true because we count up and don't count down. And it used to be 90 minutes. And they've tried, of course, as the game has become more and more professional, which is a euphemism for cheating. Then people are trying to delay the game. And so we've now brought in these rules that have to do with additional time that gets added on. Referees are now sort of clamping down on players wasting time and pretending to be injured and kicking the ball out of play, all those kind of things. So yes, I get what you're saying.
So
it used to be it was 90 minutes and now the game can sort of last 105 minutes or something like that.
So instead of a penalty for wasting time, they just add time onto the clock?
Exactly. So the game lasts 90 minutes. And so if you get injured and the game stops 1 minute, then it now lasts 91 minutes, if you see what I mean. The game, the clock doesn't stop. The referee is the guy with the watch, and he is the one who decides. So, you know, if the ball goes out of play, then rather than stop the clock, as happens in the NFL and most sports instead, it's like, okay, we're just going to add this on at the end.
Is there a clock on a scoreboard or not? Or does the referee...
Yeah, there is.
No, there is? Okay, it's synced up with the referee?
Yeah, there is. Yes, but the referee gets to decide, you know, how much of it is deliberate time wasting. And, you know, if somebody's obviously injured, then the game stopped legitimately, if you see what I mean.
So how do you know how objective is the call of a foul?
Oh, that's all the referee. Yeah, we have, and again, just like the NFL, we now have more and more in big games, especially in the World Cup and then important international tournaments. We now have what they call VAR, which is video assistant referee, where they will pause the game momentarily and they will have it reviewed. Somebody sitting at looking at a screen somewhere. So that has come into the game just really in the last few years. But of course, the great thing about soccer is it's the same game, whether you're playing it on a field in Africa or in a stadium in New York. So there's been a lot of sort of pushback against that because people are like, well, this should be the referee's call. It should be subjective and he should be the one who decides whether it's a legitimate play or whether it's a foul or whatever it may be. So VARs are something of a hot topic in the soccer world at the minute because many people are against it.
So the pitch is the same everywhere you go, the same size?
Exactly. Yes.
And how do they get to call it a pitch? Do you know?
No, I don't actually why it's a pitch and why it's not a field. Yeah. No, I don't actually know where that. I don't know where that. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. So, I don't know where that came from originally.
How many people are on each team?
11.
And do you ever go short like hockey or not? Or do you always have 11?
No. The only time you're not going to play with 11 is if somebody gets sent off. If you get a red card, if somebody commits a foul, if somebody does something really egregious, then they'll go. Or if they make two, there's a yellow card, which is a warning. And then if you get two of those, you get sent off. And you don't get, it's not like in the NFL, you do not get to replace anybody. So if somebody is sent off, if somebody commits a really bad foul, giveaway penalty, then the team then has to play shorthanded for the rest of the game. They don't get to replace that player.
So what would be a red flag, a red card, like punching somebody or something?
Yeah, exactly. Something like if you took somebody down, kicked them really hard, if you grabbed them, pulled them, those are the kind of things that are sort of frowned upon in every sport, I guess.
How many yellow cards do you get before you get a red one?
One.
Just one, oh.
So you get one warning, and then if you do it again, that's you're gone.
Now that you know more about soccer, British football, why are there still so many tickets available for major games in the U.S.?
Yes, there is excitement. But yes, there are also a lot of unsold tickets for FIFA World Cup matches. Tens of thousands of unsold tickets. Tickets had spiked for the biggest tournament in the sport's history. Joining us live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline, ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan, who is following this story. Jim, good morning. There are a lot of tickets still available all over North America, right?
Well, yeah, and in California, up to 10,000 seats were still on sale for the high-priced opener in Los Angeles that happens, tomorrow? But yeah, this has been an issue through this entire process. FIFA has something called dynamic ticket pricing, Steve. That means that as demand goes up, the prices go up. As demand goes down, the prices go down. It's sort of like Uber and its dynamic process, pricing system. You go in the middle of the day, it's going to cost more than in the middle of the night. So we're looking at the same kind of thing. The San Francisco tickets, by the way, are said to be some of the most reasonable in the whole country at about, $500 a pop?
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement about the World Cup when it was first announced. Tickets went on sale. People were going online, getting in the queue, hoping to buy tickets. So the prices went up. But now there is demand and maybe some cheaper tickets to be had, right?
Well, sure. And as we get closer to the actual matches in this country, those ticket prices may drop again. So just keep tabs on that. FIFA says the best way to ensure that you're getting a legitimate ticket instead of something, a scam, is to purchase through the FIFA site, both the original ticket seller site with FIFA and the reseller site. The thing is that on the resale site for FIFA, you're going to pay a 15% fee, both the seller and the buyer on that particular site. What's more, places like SeatGeek and StubHub say that they're offering tickets as well, that they're completely legitimate. So there's a little squabble about that as well. A few states, including California, New York, Texas, New Jersey, have launched investigations into these sky-high ticket prices. They wonder what's going on.
So what happens if there are tickets still available? I mean, FIFA certainly doesn't want the world to see empty seats at its North American venues.
You're right. Yeah, I think that FIFA is holding back some of those tickets that have not yet been sold. They may release them to through a lottery system or through some lower-priced system that will get people into those seats. But you're right. This is going to be seen on a worldwide stage. FIFA says that some of these ticket prices, the profit will go toward the broadcast rights so that it can be aired over broadcast TV for free. Otherwise, the FIFA president said, we could have just done this on a pay-per-view basis and forced people to pay to watch these matches. Instead, we're going to let the whole world watch it on TV.
Jim, before we let you go, I know you've also been reporting on some difficulties for international fans, athletes, even notably a referee traveling to North America. What can you tell us?
Right. Well, and I think we saw this coming weeks ago as well. Some sports journalists who were planning on coming into the country to cover these matches have had trouble with their visas. One referee from Africa also has been denied entry because of visa issues. So there are all sorts of controversies and wrinkles that go with this. By the time this is all over, maybe in mid-August or mid-September, we should be able to look back and see exactly how successful FIFA North America actually was with this World Cup.
All right, Jim, thank you.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.